Okay, this is Jeff Port and Patrick Keane interviewing Dominic Pagulia.
Okay, first, we just kind of want to ask you, what was it like just living around that time and around the mine?
Well, the mine was the most, that was the principal part of the county, was mining. And when I grew up, these mines were going to full blast, and they kept going to, I guess, 1942, I guess, is when the Roosevelt cut them down. And it was the life of Amador County was a motherlode. Nothing much else to say about it.
What kind of interaction did you personally have with the mine?
What?
How did you personally see the mine? Did you work with the mine at all?
I didn't work one single minute at the mine. I did apply for a job at the Kennedy when they was putting in those, when they rerun the sand, they put in that plant in back of the Serbian church. Now they got it all covered with dirt. And I went there three times there trying for a job, and the foreman would come on out. You know, they might have been, and that was, you know, was in the 30s, and the people were looking for work. They might have been 25 or 30 of us there. And we just run out, nothing doing today! And turned his back, and old Jack Carrasco was gone. And so about the third time, they drafted me, and I never went back. And I wasn't looking for no underground job, because I think the Lord put me here to watch for the sun. So I stayed up and watched, and on top, and see the, take the same route every day.
Well, do you remember what other kind of jobs there were up above, not on the ground?
Yeah, there was, if there would have been a top job offered to me now, I would have taken the top job, because there was all kinds of top work, you know. And, you know, there was just framed the timber from the ground, they had a strong mill there, and then at the Kennedy, they had the crusher, and then they had it transferred, it brought it, cart, it brought it into the mill. And any of those top jobs, there would have been, I'd have been green on any of them, but I would have been willing to take a job because I was looking for work. But they couldn't paid me enough to go down there underground, because I wasn't cut out to go underground. I did have two brothers that both did mining, and with that E shaft there, my dad started when they first started it, thinking that E shaft, that was around the 1900, and he stayed with it till they got down to 1900 feet. And then he quit it. And he went to work for the, I guess, Blue Lake Water Company, and they put in Bear River and the Blue Lake. He worked for seven seasons up there. After that, he got married and was came back home on the ranch. That was really, he was done with mining, so. Okay.
Well, both your brothers worked in the mines, right?
They both worked, but they didn't work. Well, Henry worked in the Kennedy a mill, just as a young punk for, I don't know. What?
The sawmill?
No, in the Kennedy mining mill that we're talking about, where they processed the rocks and separated it from the gold. I think they did. And you had 100 or 120 stamp mail? What is it?
It was 120,
I think. Yeah, I think it was 120. Yeah. He worked there for a while. And him and Jim both worked in the organ office. They worked down in the bottom. And then the strike come on. And went on strike. And they didn't go back. They went to Mariposa, worked in the mine for a while over there. They come back here and when the strike was settled, I see they didn't go back to the tent to the Oregon Outer Power anymore.
Do you remember when the strike was? I can hear the strike.
The strike. Was that 31, 32? No, I'm not too sure. No,
okay. Anybody try to put in contact with other events?
What?
Do you remember other events that were happening around the strike at the time?
Well, during the strike, they had the vigilantes opposing the miners. The miners was asking, they were getting $4, I guess, for the miners, and they were asking 50 cents a day more. And the town people didn't support them. They did not seem to support them. The biggest majority didn't support the miners. And where were those boys going to spend them with? They were going to spend it in town. You know, let's put it this way. The world was much smaller in those days than it is today.
Yeah.
In those days, if you struck out from Jackson to go to Sacramento, and you had a pretty good car, you might make it and an hour and a half, an hour and three quarters, just for 2 hours. To go down, now they go in 50 minutes, you're in Sacramento. The people in those days, you was from home to work, and from work back home, and you was in your hometown. You didn't venture out too far.
Why didn't you
show us
something more about your brothers
in the mines?
What stories about your brothers working
in the mines? Well, they started working, I think there was around 6,000 feet or better, and there was 375 a day, and working. They just started. They started, I guess, with the old Mexican drag line, shoveling and pushing cars and stuff like that. So they learned the trick of mining and drilling and how to break rock and shoot and stuff like that. They learned the mining game all right enough. They got out of it. And then after they got out of it, and it was too much later that Uncle Sam called them and showed them how to march and how to gave them a gun and all kinds of ammunition, especially Jim. He landed in North Africa. He went all through Africa, North Africa, and then all the way up to Italy. I guess clean into Germany and then back to Italy and got discharged. But Henry, he went through to England and into Germany, and he was there all the time in Germany. So they both had quite an experience. Henry came out the luckiest because and he happened to make the pitches. And Jim made the field. Jim was the communication guy. He had charge of the power equipment on that communication line, signal corps. Had his truck blasted to heck, he was on one side of the truck, and his partner was on the other side of the truck, and that was the end of him. He survived, and the other guys got just mangled up like sawdust. Shell hit their equipment.
Do you remember the Argonaut disaster?
Yes, sir. It was pretty young fellow at the time. Yes, yeah, we remember the disaster. In fact, I got called in as a trial juror when they were trying those four people for fighting on that picket line. And I got my wish anyway. I didn't want to serve whatsoever. And on the second day, the district attorney asked me, you knew one of the guys that was being tried there? And I answered him, correctly, yes, I knew Pete. And so he asked the judge to dismiss me. So he didn't want somebody that knew, because I just knew him that he was there. Just another man that you know, that's all. So I got the heck out of there. I didn't want to be there to judge anybody, to send them to prison or turn them loose. There was some of the guys would have liked to stay, and one of them, in fact, made kind of a wise remark when he was being questioned, and the judge called him on it, called him off the bench. And he told him, he said, right here, everybody is innocent until he's proven guilty, and the state is not going to prove anybody guilty unless he got sufficient evidence that he is guilty. And he said, and for you, the wife's question, he said, if I knew for sure if you did this to get discharged, he said, I'd have you to a sergeant and talk to you later. But he said, get off of the bench. The guy got off and he went and he sat down in the audience. He said, off to the courtroom. He ordered him right out of the courtroom, and he was a local guy. I knew him for years, and I knew him for years after that. But he was a vigilante. He was strictly against me. I don't know. He would judge against those guys that got in a fight on the picket line. So I got off of it anyway. And I was sure glad, so I didn't hear too much of it no more than. But I wasn't in the court to listen to it. To decide on. And they had quite a bit of doings around the Kennedy, or I remember, when they hauled logs, and in fact we even cut some logs here on the ranch, and sold them, not to the Kennedy, we sold them to the Argonaut, but they cut logs 16 feet long, down to a certain size. I don't remember now. I think about 10 inches, I suppose, top, and 16 feet long. And well, never had anything around the ranch here. It was much more than 2 feet on the stump, you know, the second row stump. And this has been over 50 years ago too, so it isn't just yesterday.
The mining,
did it really clear out a lot of the trees around here and stuff?
Was there a lot of trees real cleared out?
Well, I mean, they used a lot of timber in the mines when they first started these mines, before electricity came so available. Enough of it, they run by steam. And they would run wood fire, and those boilers were wood fire, and that's what cleared up these hills around here, especially oak timber and stuff like that, for firewood. They keep those fires going all the time, and everything run by steam, your shop, your hoist, your mill, and everything run by steam power. Kennedy, in fact, after the railroad back into Martell, they had a spur, and they had got away from wood and put in oil. I mean, to run the steam plant. And I don't remember the date, but they had a fire up there. It destroyed their log pile and quite a bit of the structures around there.
Do you know about when that fire might have been?
What?
Do you know about when that fire might have been?
Well, I mean, I read this article this morning that Carolyn gave me it's written about the Garbarinis, and they were implicated with the head frame and stuff. Mm-hmm. I read that article this morning there, and I think it says something about the date when the fire burned, because that Garbarini, I guess he's the guy that put in that California there. So that it might give you the date there when that fire, you had the fire. You can have it.
Yeah, at first from some people, there was the big pile of the tailings out behind the Serbian church. Yeah, at first from some people, the wind would pick up and that would blow around.
Oh, yes. It gets so on a heavy wind that you couldn't hardly see.
Yeah.
You see, it was fired over the hill.
Yeah.
I guess the dam is still in there. Part of it, it was fired back where the big wheels are at. Then they took it up. I remember that hill. It was in there where they piled the sawdust on there. It was really a nice hay field there, and they mow it every year and plant some of it. Then it belonged to the company, and they put the plant up on the hill there and pumped that stuff up into those tanks. And I really never went on up to the plant while it was working. I went up to and gathered up quite a few truckloads of that crushed rock, and I was working with the county. So I put in about 9 years on the District 1 on County Road, and we tore the plant down, and I guess they used some of the crushed rock. Must have used it in some of those tanks, because it was left around where the interior of the tanks were at, where they processed whatever, and they used it for drain rock. Well, it was the same kind of rock that you used, you grain lined and stuff like that. We used quite a bit of it along the road because we didn't have no equipment they've got today. The only equipment they had, it had a cat and a grader, and there's any digging to do, use a pick and shovel. And we helped dig a lot of ditches and drains here and there, but today they do it in nothing flat with a piece of equipment, and we did it with pick and shovel.
Yeah.
And put in drains and stuff in different places. Like I say, I made a few trips up there, but after the plan was gone.
You worked on
the roads,
right? You worked on roads up there?
I worked on the roads about 9 years, yeah.
Did you interact with the
mines
at all with
your
work?
Well, the only thing that we had to do with the mine, we did with the mine, they sharpened our drill steel. And we go in when we were doing some drilling and stuff, occasionally, and, you know, we whatever came on up, and bring in a bunch of steel and have it sharpened. And then we go back and gather it up. They brought us a boat mine. Sometimes we had 15, 20 pieces of steel, and maybe more, bring them in and have them sharpened for jackhammer steel. And just pick, a few picks, and stuff like that. They sharpened them at the mine because they had machinery that was sharpening. The blacksmith, we had a blacksmith shop in town. If you wanted to take it from the sharpener, we'd bring it into them. But the jackhammer steel, the scarred bits, cross bits, you know, they had four bits, four cutters, and they pressed the head in. On the pressure, it was hammered out with a hammer. They had a special machine to sharpen them.
Do you remember what your brother's jobs were in the mine?
What?
Do you remember what your brother's jobs were?
What kind of work?
Yeah.
Well, they did regular mining. They started out, I guess, picking shovel there. And cars, and then they did regular mining, drilling, and whatever, you know. I think they called it stoking, because they wasn't working thinking, they was working. It seems to me, the way I understand, they follow the vein, and they cut out a chunk and leave a chunk, so it was just like a room, so they leave support. You could take it all out and have to leave the forest. So it is really what they call mining, regular mining, and so forth.
So the mines really kind of, the community, the mines kind of ran the community back then. It was just kind of, that was what got the community going, and community was the fact that the mines were here. And what kind of entertainment was there around, and what else was there around at the same time as the mines?
Well, there wasn't too much around the time of the mine. The time the town was pretty well open, and the town was a little bit wild. And it was, I think, starting there were the Bank of America that had the, and going to the other end of town, there were 10 or 11 saloons, places where you could go in and get a few snorts, and they did a little gambling, and they had other side entertainment. But, I think Governor Brown shut it down, so.
Remember,
the town was pretty wild.
Remember any kind of events you had?
What?
Up here? Were there any like special holidays you had up here?
Well, the 4th of July Italian picnic and they had different times of year, they had different ones, but that was the biggest celebration. We were 4th of July, all the had parades and that kind of doing. And they had the miners out there, drilling contests and stuff like that, with a handrail or mucking contest, and the prize of who did it in the less amount of time, or who accomplished more, longer hole in it, which is demonstrating like the old, really, the beginners, it was all handrail, and that they put on something like, I guess they do now and then, when they put on these, they did it around West Point, put on this celebration, I think around 4th of July or so, on demonstrating the sawn a log and thrown an axe and all that kind of stuff. So they had those in the celebration. Then, of course, you know, Christmas and New Year's is always a big doings around. And then, you know, holidays is always something taking to do.
Were those contests frequent?
No, the little drilling contests, the ones that generally were 4th of July deals.
You mentioned the Italian
Christmas.
So, there, back when those divides, do you remember a lot of different
festivals?
There was a lot of
Italian
festivals,
right? Well, there was a lot of Italian around Jasmine. In fact, this whole community through here, through her barter to that, there was a French layout doing. Then there was a French layout in the town of Clinton, because when I remember the town was gone, there was two men living up there. One of them was living in the old Arada place, and one was living in the Boree saloon, and he owned the town. And one of them was just a wood chopper. That was the only two people there was in that part of the country when I remember. But at one time they had quite a to-do. Different stable and a store and saloon and everything else in Finn. And but the ranches starting down at Norman Del Porto, coming all the way up to Clinton. They were Italian.
Yeah, was there much interaction between the different groups, the different ethnic groups, do you remember, or was it kind of a division between the French and the Italians or anything?
No, that, I don't remember too much of it, but I mean, they settled this district, and in fact, they settled at Middleport. When they left mining, a bunch of those where these people come from, the Americans from Genoa, that's who them are, black farmers. Were farmers, most of those guys come from that surrounding, during the mining days, the special mining,
Do you remember any specific like businesses or places in Jackson that were here during the time of the mines that closed down later on after the mine was closed?
Yeah. I mean, the town was all run by there was no body from the state who come in here and started in kind of running competition to the locals, you know, Ma and Dad places, was when Safeway came in. Other than that, as far as anything that I can just barely remember, they had a macaroni factory, and that burned down. That burned down, I guess, in 1910 or 11, because one of the Giovannonis that came up and bought this barter place over here from Landerite, and he was one of the brothers that was in the macaroni factory, and one brother went to Oakland, Stockton, and he became more efficient. And Charlie, I don't know what he done, but he was out too. He shut down, but they was running the macaroni factory and on the baker shop. And other than that, the baker shop is still in the same place it was then, where it is today. The Giovannonis were there, and they had locked down mixed with Sam Store. That's why they had a macaroni factory. Other than that, there was no factory that I know of around. It was just farming and cattle raising and mining. Mining was the livelihood of the town, and PG&E, of course, they were developing and they put in these plants and stuff.
Did the mines raise population?
What?
Did the mines raise population? Like, did people from other counties come over here to work in these mines?
Well, I mean, that looked like to me, from what I could understand, when my brothers worked in the mine, they went in during the rough times, and they just got to get anything. Most of the miners were Mexican, because the mines were getting so deep and hot that the white men didn't want to take the heat, and it was run. When they shut them down, it was running the underground was running heavy Mexicans, both Argonauts and Kennedy.
Yeah, earlier you mentioned there was a lot of ranching and farming up there.
What?
There was a lot of ranchers and farming up
there
around this area.
They were all for farming. Yeah. They all did raise something and had go to town to sell it, peddle it off, or trade it off at the store, you know, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. They all like the Acuños, they run the peddling wagons to town all year round, raise the vegetables and fruit and stuff like that.
Remember who the biggest farmers were? Who had the biggest farms, the biggest ranches up there?
Well, I mean, right here was all small stuff, and locally was all small stuff. Maybe half a section or a section. About a section maybe was a big ranch, but you think about Jackson, I guess, what Boozy property today, and all of that thing, everything south of Hoffman Street was madly Hayfield. that the headquarters was right in there where they had the house and the barn, right in there where Mel's service station was, and the Mel's hamburger station was. I remember the old water trough in there yet, and then the one of them, at least, the houses is still there. But one of the boys, when he got married, he built that house right next to, I guess, what he got in there, some sign layout or something, right next to Mel. That was Albert Matley's home. And he was one of the sons of the old original Matley ranch. And from Matley it went to McGee, and from McGee it went to Boozy. But the McGee reserved that hill there that they built up. He built his home. He reserved that, and there was no home. As I personally remember, there was a mine up there called the Alma Mine, but it wasn't running. There was a gallop stream. I don't remember the names of these streets, but as you go on up the hill, you get from the highway. The only street that was in there, that first street in there, where Ann Hubbardy lived, right on the corner. And that was the only street. There was a line of houses that went back, far back of the brewery. And the brewery was in there where Galley Service Station is at. As far as the big business in town, that's right. The brewery was hired, you know, they had a distribution. That could see wagons are running. And I remember it was started in having trucks. And ice and beer factory that made ice and produced their beer. It was strong. There's some relation to this Jake Strong. I guess he's the guy that built that big motel there across from Lucky. He's still implicated in building and stuff like that from Buena Vista. His two brothers, Jake and John, and they're descendants of the old Strong brewery man.
Okay, going back to your brothers who work in the mine, do you remember how many hours a day they would have to work?
Oh, they were working 8 hours.
8 hours.
Did they
work every day of the week?
They worked every day of the week. Then they had a day off or 2 days off when they changed shifts. You know, they were working three shifts then, see. And then you work 2 weekdays, 2 weeks night, and 2 weeks graveyard shift. You know, I heard them the other day. I went down to that meeting when they were talking about the mines, and Carolyn had me go on down there. I said, I don't want to go on down there. I said, I don't know anything about it. I said, I never worked around the mine. I always just come down and listen to them anyway. Some guy asked in the audience asked how they came calling the 11 or 7 shift graveyard shift. Well, nobody could give any answers. Everybody said, that's all we ever heard. That's what it was called. From 11 to 7, called it the graveyard shift. And other than that, you work 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm. you remember any stories about your brothers that were kind of funny stories, interesting stories about what happened to you when they were working in their
minds? No, not exactly, no. You know, this is the come out of there, you didn't know if there was human beings or wolfers. So just, you know, just a mess. I went up there and seen them, and I've seen human time and time and again, having to be there when they come off shift. And some of those guys are working in there. They were drilling wet. When my brother was there, it was drilling wet, you know. Because that's where you can go to the graveyard and you can see the old grave, and you won't see in the men folks, you won't see too many of them that are over 50 years old that were miners. So they say, well, he said, what did he die from? Oh, rock in a box. Yeah. That drilling dry and sucking in that fine rock that cut the bottom of the lung. As soon as they settled down there, and they said, well, yeah, rock in a box. So they had too much mining and they felt calling on something, okay. Some went to hell.
And the conditions were real bad when
they
worked on the mine.
The condition, there was no provision to, if something happened to you and in the mine, they could haul you out of the hole and turn you over to either to your family and your doctor, or turn you over to the undertaker and hire another guy in your place. And that's all they say. Well, he's gone. You have another man in his place, and there was no compensation or whatsoever. You know, or well, if he wasn't to work and he's dead, well, he paid off his errors. I guess he had I guess he paid once a month there. He had a few days of coming. And that was the end of that story. Today, they maybe do something about it. It was, nothing done about it. They hauled him out of there, and they just hauled him away. Once in a while, I've heard that I guess some of them maybe trying to pick up a little storm, and then maybe superintendent or so of the mine, they go to the family, they lost their husband, and she was maybe a woman that was capable of working and had an extra room or two, and they tell you were the single man and working there, and you go ahead and you go over and board that place. And you just say, well, I'm not going to go over there. Well, then get on the office and get some time. So that's how, as much as you had to say, they tell you what to do if you wanted to work there.
Do you know anyone personally who was injured in the mine?
Well, now you see, it was guys who was injured every day in the mine. I mean, to some degree. I knew a couple of guys. In fact, one of them was my first cousin. And one of them had married my first cousin too. He was related to marriage, and one of them was just a friend, and they two of them got blasted one of them, my cousins, both of them got blasted. One of them was in the Moore mine, and he kicked into a missile. The charge went off. He was working in his throat. Just sticking it through the breast hole like that. Here comes a whole charge of dynamite like that. So, it's done for 20 years. I know it's just came home from service a couple of years. It was World War One. The other one, he kicked in the, he was in the Zile, that's the mine that you were just going on Broadway. But that rock building, that was where you go up to the mission.
Yeah.
The Zile mine was right there on the hill. It was all the officers still in there. Because tomorrow, I don't know who knows who lived in it. I see somebody got a log truck in the yard there. They live in it. That was the only Zile's office. He kicked into it. And this hole, he lasted a few days, but he died. And then he got tangled up somehow with the skin. And those are people that I knew. But there was always somebody, you know, close up. I just with a broken arm, a broken leg, or a crushed hand, or a bump on the head, or this and that and the other. There was somebody skinned up all the time. It was working in the mine.
Did your brothers ever come back with minor injuries?
One of them got hurt a little bit. He got the rock kind of nasty for the day. And he was out for a couple of weeks or so, somewhere. But there's no complication, nothing there. No doctor or anything. The doctor, you shell that out of your pocket, that's all.
Going
back to what life was like around the mine, do you remember, where did you go to, like, buy groceries or a gas store, or like a general store in town or something?
Or
was there
like a
grocery
store or something?
Well, they were all independent stores. That's the stores that I remember, grocery stores in town, was Caffinelli. That's right in there where Eldorado Savings, going up the street. The Eldorado Savings is in the where the liver stable used to be. And the last business we did was in there, and it was still open. The gas for Sargent had a similar garage. And they were right next to it. And across the street, where that little store is at, it's the only little store that there is left on Main Street. I think they call it the Mother Load. It's got a really kind of a little spot that you can buy two little groceries. That's kind of a sandwich, kind of a daily affair. And then the Spinetti, now they call it Spinkles. It was up there where the cleaners were at. They had a grocery store, and they had a delivery wagon. There were Wells Fargo, where Dan had his place, a brick building on Water Street. And there's the Wells Fargo saloon was there. That was a General Hardware, Genocules. And he had the delivery man, the two-horse wagon, or Dominic Zanini. And they did deliver. You know, the bread man to deliver, the butcher to deliver out of butcher cart. And they did the river in the morning and make their rounds. And the bread men would make their rounds. They had two baker shops. One of them had a baker shop on Fifth. Yeah, when you go in from this side, from Broadway, if you get on top of the hill, on top of the first little hill, about four or five houses on up, to the right. The alley turns to the right, and that was the Cattle Marquis. Had their baker shop there. They make their bread there, and they had their place in there where the water worked, at their office. So he had it go along and down, but he'd run a delivery wagon in the morning. There were a lot of, they called them boarding houses then. You see, like what Muscoli and Marquise they had on. So they were both boarding houses. They had a place to sleep, and they maybe have 10 or 15 miners boarding there, and then like the bread man or the meat man and stuff like that. These boarding houses, as they call them then, they didn't have the facilities of, you know, refrigerating anything like they have today. The meat man, he'd come, he'd order the meat, and he'd come with the meat, maybe 2-3 times a week or whatever. And over to Panola, that stroll down Jackson Gate. Where that, I don't know what the world is running. I think there's nothing in it now, is it?
I'm not sure.
Huh?
I'm not sure.
They had a delivery wagon, and right in there where the Civic Center is at, well, there was a lumber yard, and a grocery store. Now, I don't think they did any delivering. One of those corporate ships in Belgevich, London. Then when Belgevich died, Joe DeRoe bought in with him with corporate ships. And then they started delivering. And then Kopersich, Joe bought him out, and he moved over to Genocchio. He was just too damn old, he couldn't cut the buck anymore. And he rented it out. His son-in-law was pretty old too. Fred Judy, it was raised where the hospital is at. They had their house just above where that they put up that landing for their helicopter. It was a two-story brick building. That was the old Judy property. Yeah, there was one of the Genocchio girls, and they were both old, and I remember at one time, at Genocchio, you could just go there and buy anything you wanted to buy. You wanted to buy a pair of socks, or you wanted to buy a ton of steel, or enough for lumber to build a house. They sold just everything in general. He furnished a blacksmith shop with steel, and they had a lumber yard out there on Pitt, and they had a grocery and a dry goods store. The dry goods store was in there where the saloon was at, where a well qualified saloon. So he had the town, see? And the people, they generally, especially the farmers, they would be dealing with one store, and they'd take it on assignment. A lot of stuff they did trading, you brought in whatever you had, and buy what you needed, and they sold in the store in the line of vegetables and stuff like that, and fruit. They did business that way. They were all independent stores. There was one store came in within a little while. Oh, what the heck was that? Well, just about across from the baker's shop. And they come in there. Well, they were during the war. And it was kind of a chain layout. They didn't last no time at all. And I can remember old Pete Casanelli. There were some Chinamen come in down at the Krabbenhoff building. He started a little store. And when Safeway came in, old Pete said, well, they won't be here very long. He said, we've run those other guys on out. That was the old original Pete, because it was Pete Senior and Pete Junior, but this was old Pete, the guy that had started the store there. He said, they won't be there too long, because Safeway come into where Sammy's restaurant is at. That's where Safeway started in Jackson. And Pete was across the street. He said, they won't last long. He said, they come in here, he said, they're making a big show now. But Safeway would have made about three moves since they left there. They went down where the bank is there. Oh, but that's real estate outfit of that. Oh well, they went there, and then they went on up. They went on up there where coast to coast, build that, and then come back and went over there and build in Tommy Jones, where Tommy Jones born and house was at. And they were just talked to around town. They're moving off of the main road. They're not going to make out. You go in there, you can't find it. You've got to wait a half an hour to have them check your damn basket on out. There's so many guys ahead of you. You got a loaf of bread, you got to wait a half an hour to pay for it. Well, I heard the same story about when they built that mall up on the 88 up on the hill. One guy, woman especially, said, what in the world are they grading out and making such a big parking lot? They said, they'd be lucky there'd be a dozen cars pulled in there in the whole day. And you go, sometimes you go up there, and I go up there now and then, I go up to Circles, you know, for lunch. And you have to drive around the place, and you can't find a place to park to go in and get your hamburgers.
Did you ever work with any of the sawmills?
What?
Did you ever work
with any of the sawmills? Some little drip water mill that I pulled around Tremis. Cut about you know, three-inch stuff and big stuff, 12 by 12, 12 by 16, and stuff like that. That mill was, it cut it far as much. The organite used to buy a lot of square timber. We were doing the last year, you see, when they started some trucks coming on in and stuff like that. There was a little mill around from it. Used to cut up the timber for the mine. Other than that, Kennedy, I don't think, they always did their own. And till up towards the last, it hit your own. We fought by it, run around on.
Do you know what they used the wood for? Just for timbers inside or for...
What?
Do you know what they used the lumber for timbers for inside the mine?
Oh, yeah, mine, I guess, is all supported. The shaft, support the shaft, made in the D compartment. We've got two skips going in different compartments. The shaft is always up dead. The timbers from top to bottom make no difference how hard the rock was and what. And then those rifts and stuff like so, I hear the boys talking about it. When they went through ground, it was the shaky. Posted it and covered it. So as they drilled and went ahead, the timberman come behind and put the timber in supported those tunnels or whatever you want to call them. And they backfilled, I guess, in those when they were mining those strokes and stuff like that. They backfilled a lot with some of their scrap rock, they had to go through some rock that wasn't gold-bearing ore, and whenever they had a chance, they would put it in some of those. Instead of horsing it all the way on out, sort of just back though.
Do you know that they used all the trees around here?
What?
Do you know if they used all the different trees around here? Digger pine, ponderosa?
The digger pine were used, they may have used some for wood, but you could cut a log off of those diggers. Or they use the ponderosa or the sugar pine down in this lower country. And then when they got above the pioneer, they used what they liked, they had to get the most, was spruce. Because that was the stronger timber. Or the red fir, they called it spruce. I don't know if either name is the right name for it, but I know we always call it red fir in the plant. That's what you mostly of dimension lumber and cut, because that's the left around the two sticks of it. Your 2x4, 2x6 or something, construction number, no building number, is a sawmill cut around. Well, white and red fur, and a lot of them that do any like school building or stuff like that, they contract, they would specify for the local lumber to be red fur. And if you was building a house, if you wanted to go $2 cheaper, you would buy white fur because it's so different to me. But the dimension lumber was always in the fur part of it, so clear, fine stuff, they're different cuts, you know. Well, they had the common, but then they had the good grade of lumber, and stock like they used to for door frames and door window frames and all that stuff that went through the molding plant. That's where our brother Henry worked. He won one of those saws where they cut off saws where they cut the lumber for length, you know, for your windows or for your doors or whatever the order was. And then they cut the knots off of the short pieces, and they went to another side, and that went to the joiner, and they to join you as long as the others. You could make a piece of board there a mile long, because if they were set, you got to keep the feed through the lumber through the machine, and when that stick went out so many feet, that saw a drop and cut around up, and they keep it pushing through. Like I say, if the guy that had pushed the guard in the door, you could have made a piece of lumber as long as you wanted. And I had his cousin, he run it for quite a part of the there putting it together. And I don't know, one time it was second mohair over in the barn. Everybody brought some mohair, and I built a platform. So we had the eight foot stack, and put in. Guy get in there and you keep the pumping it down, and you feed it down to him, and you put in some better than 400 pound of mohair in one of those sacks. And old Louis, my cousin, he had got crushed. He just mashed up to the heck out of his shoulders, left his leg, and hook turned loose on the jammer, and the logs come and get him and caught him in between two logs. He, when they first started hauling the logs to the mill, they loaded them with a shovel, see? And they had two men. One, they had this table, and then had your two leads coming on out. And they hook on each end of the lead, and the guy had a rope, and you run.
You're like this. You set your hook here, and he set his hook over there.
And the first man was pulled, and when he pulled it, hooked the log, and took it on up. So he took the log on up, and when the hook pulled off, and it caught the timber caught down and caught Louis in between the log and just crushed him. And he was over there, and oh, there was women and folks and kids and all there. There was a whole bunch of them, because there was five or six different farmers, you know, from Doug Ford, New Cunha's, and down there was right here, and then on the other side, Onero's. They come on over, and a couple of guys from Calaveras County, and we set the wool in one central point. And he was, Louis was weighing, and so he weighed all the kids, and he weighed everybody was on down on the ground, and me and Jerome was on up. Jerome was in the sack because he weighed 20-30 pounds more than I did, pumping it down, and I did feed it to him and then do the sewing. So the sack, we came on down, we got down. He said, well, so he said, I weighed everybody. He said, sit on the scale, I'm going to weigh you guys, see how much you weigh. I said, I don't need nobody to weigh me, because I said, I know how much I weigh. And he said, how much do you weigh? Oh, I said, 195, 96. Ho, he said. He thought he was a little bit heavier than I was, you know. He stood a little bit broader at the shoulder. So I said, yeah, just put that damn key on 195 pounds. He said, don't think that I weigh that much. So he put it on there, and he had to move it up a little bit. I just started to pound up. And he looked at me, and then he looked at me, and he said that he weighed 186 pounds. Well, I said, Jerome, I turned around to Jerome. I said, he doesn't work for a living. I said, he did. Jerome said, what? I said, he can go up to the lake I said, and he'd be a good man to get it back then. I said, that's all. I said, he's got a little piece of the rubber that long. He can make it that joyless. I said, they give us a piece of rubber. I was repairman. Take 4 or 5 of us to roll it in front of a gun, let alone picking it up. I said, no wonder. I said, he's just a bunch of flabs. I said, he ain't no muscle to him at all. Although he doesn't like it fit. He always thought he had me beat in weight when I told him I weighed 190 pounds, 96 pounds. He thought that if I would have said 176, then he would have thought that I was telling him so much. But the scales kept telling him, told him this is what I should say to the other way. Okay. Yeah, he was, I worked around there. I worked for 19 years maintaining. You did anything. Makes no difference what. Today he was working on top of the roof, and Murray was working, building the pouring cement or whatever, or putting the siding on the building or whatever. It makes no difference.
What mill did you work at? What was it called?
Yeah, that was a wind and lumber company. That was when we went to American Forest. Then it went to Bendix, then back to American Forest, and I left the last day of 70. So I started my 27th year that I retired from up there. Last day of 70. So the first of the year come, I started the 27th year. It was gone 26 years. It doesn't seem that long. They didn't have no particle board in there. When I went in there, and then of course then they put that generator in there. I never went back around the plant and just put that generator. I did go to the particle board and kind of look it over. And then now since they tore down the planing mill and put the new planing mill and stuff in up there, I never went up and went through that. But the planing mill. Last time I went on up there, I went up. I was talking to Vern Parker, and I met him first. I said, what's doing, Vern? He said, oh, well, he said, maybe one more month. He said, yeah, I'm on the road. He said, he got everything stripped out in the plywood plant. And he said, why don't you come over and take a look at it? And I said, I'm going to have to call up Regan. I said, see if he call him up and give me leave me to go on in, because they had a washerman in there. Oh, he said, the heck with that old man. He said, you come in on the back way. He said, off of the cut across road, you know. He said, you come in the back way. He said, and put up to the guy who come on out. He said, you tell him you're going up and see Vern. And he said, just keep going. He said, he ain't going to question you. And I went on up there, and I went in there. There wasn't a damn thing left into that damn building, other than the 2 steam dryers that was on the far end, even the big gas dryer that I helped put in. They had even tore that out. Everything, you know, went in there. There was nothing. It was just an open barn. That's all. Nothing left. They had taken the lathe, you know, everything out. All of where they did their grading, their pressing, and all of that kind of stuff. Everything was gone. The 2 steam dryers, they hadn't taken them out. I don't know if they ever took them out or not. There were 2 steam dryers on the end. That's the last trip I made in there. There's no fact in there anymore. Vern said he was. Said, well, maybe about 30 days. He said, I think I'm going to be cleared out of here.
Thank you for talking with us.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Okay.